Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
Or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. All Garda stations believes the listener should be 24/7. Cutting back on policing in a growing population, they say, is senseless. Another, we have the 15th road death in Donegal alone this year compared to four this time last year. The government is closing hours of Garda stations and then they wonder why we have an issue. Why is the RSA doing what? Is the RSA doing to reverse this happening? Nothing, believes the listener. And sometimes it can feel like that. I understand where you're coming from. People walking in the bright sunshine, especially in the evening time, it can be very difficult to see the people in the shadow of the trees with sunshine coming through the windscreen. A high-vis vest should be worn in this weather so people can be seen. I'm not sure in daylight how that helps, but I suppose it's a bright yellow and anything. I'm not certainly not going to try and poo-poo anything that might help at all. A caller says, I saved €120 by buying 400 litres of kerosene in Northern Ireland. It's crazy the price being quoted here despite prices dropping every week. I saw £4.64 for 500 litres of oil advertised there recently. I'm not sure how that might compare with prices in Northern Ireland. That being said, we did have a case recently where someone was transporting kerosene from Northern Ireland to their home in the Republic and it was seized from them. So it feels like the old days of the border checkpoints. It's very strange that Israel are able to exactly target and kill people in Lebanon, but in Palestine they have to carpet bomb schools to kill so-called terrorists. You would nearly think it's planned, Greg. That comes in from Noel. It's an interesting observation, Noel. Greg, I was listening to Ruby's Gran on with you yesterday and I was really touched by it all. As a grandmother myself, I'm praying for Ruby and will support the GoFundMe page. That comes in from Maria. Thanks, Maria. Yeah, we were chatting to Ruby's granny yesterday. Ruby was complaining of a sore leg and was taken to Letterkenny Hospital, and very soon it was discovered that the wee girl had a very aggressive form of very rare cancer and is undertaking an intense treatment process. And we spoke to her gran and we heard of Ruby's bravery back calling around to gran's house and sitting at the table playing Roblox and what have you. But life has changed for them in an instant. And I think, you know, I went home yesterday very luckily to my three healthy boys, and stories like that take a while to lift from you too. I felt very grateful, but also couldn't get Ruby and her family out of my mind either. The GoFundMe page is there. We linked it on our social media and they're raising money really so mum and dad can, they need to take time off work, I think, to sort of dedicate themselves to Ruby and her intensive treatment program that's going through. And there've been huge response to that already. I'll get the name of that properly and read it out to you a little later on. We also spoke yesterday or heard from a listener whose daughter went to get her hair cut in Donegal, and the quoted price was 140-odd, and it was indicated that there could be add-ons. Anyway, the bill ended up being something like €240, and the mum was very upset. This listener says, I believe that young girl should report the pricing to Consumers' Rights for her haircut and curl. It should have stated on the price and list from two, or a proper price list showing extras. Report to Consumer Rights and let them investigate it. A caller says some of Sinn Féin's problems stems from the way they're promising almost instant solutions to all our housing and health problems. The average citizen realises that these promises are not achievable in any short term. The average voter perceives this is nothing more than electioneering. And it may well not be electioneering, but you're 100% right. We are simple folk, us, the general population, and if a person A says we're going to build 70,000 houses a year and this is how we're going to do it, and person B says no, we're going to build 75,000 houses a year and this is how we're going to do it, I think there's a sense, if you were to poll 1,000 people, that neither might deliver because it's such a huge problem and it seems so hard to overcome, though both A and B might state they've got the solution to it. And that's why little issues become so important. That's why the conversation about the referendum, little things that are changeable and manageable for us to understand, i.e. what is a woman, should a woman be in the constitution, etc. The issue of immigration, you know, should people be allowed to come in the numbers that they are to live in Ireland and to be supported by the state? What's going to be done about Ukrainian people seemingly being having an advantage in terms of Susie grants, for an example. These are the things, these are the emotive things that people are more likely to vote in an election on. I believe, I could be wrong. Rather than the big stuff like the health system and housing, we recognise they're the two biggest issues, but people struggle to figure out who can fix it and how they can fix it. And that's why the next election will be won probably on the more tangible, imminent things. Can Highland put out on air the number to get a national insurance number in Northern Ireland for students who are going to study in the north? It's very hard to get the number. Well, you know our number, 07491 25000. Call us, we'll give it to you. I can read that number out for you right now. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you want to get a pen and paper, I'll read the number out for the national insurance card for Northern Ireland students in about 30 seconds, in case that's relevant to you. Greg, driving from Letterkenny Hospital at 3.55 yesterday afternoon, smooth trip to the station roundabout, then it seemed an overlong stop at the ATU lights, then it took three light changes to pass the Polestar. The lights don't let enough cars out, clogging the Port Road. That comes in from Daniel. Thanks, Daniel, for that observation. A caller says the sun is very low, hard for drivers at that time. Yep, the sun, and this is talking, generally speaking, about our cars and what have you. This is completely unrelated to any recent events. But, I mean, how many of us have cleaned the inside of our windscreen lately? You know, people might be smoking or vaping or eating in their cars, whether they should or shouldn't. That's not the point. And you can get this film that can build up through the summer on the inside of your windscreen, and you get a low sunlight, and all of a sudden it's a blur. So, as well as us as drivers, when was the last time we cleaned the inside of our windscreen or made sure we had water in the washers? Which would mitigate to some extent what you're talking about. Hi Greg, just past Newton Garda station any day of the week, and the Garda Jeep never moves. It's the same in Carrigan station. Garda car lying in around the back. Now, some of those cars may be over mileage or something, I don't know. Let me see. Any word of the bypass? Balaba Faye should be bypassed by now if we had the right people, a right power on the situation. It's an ongoing process. It is moving forward. And it's in a process. The planning process in this country is very slow. Right, let me give you that number. That number for the national insurance number in Northern Ireland for students. It's 0044 800 587 0024. We'll retain that here in case any of you want to give us a call. A caller says skate parks and play parks, fair enough, but getting rid of the phones and their Nintendos might help too. Yeah, well, it's all Nintendos, but I take your point. I want to let you know that Hazel Key, Dunlewis Stranoller, she's holding a coffee morning to raise funds for the Donegal Hospice. It's this morning. Do you have us on in the background, Hazel? It runs from Thursday between today, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So that's Hazel Key Dunwiley, Stranoller. Hazel Key Dunwiley Stranoller holding a coffee morning to raise funds today for the Donegal Hospice, and it's running until 2 p.m. Right, okay. Okay, there was a significant launch this week. It was the We Don't Want This video campaign, and the campaign aims to tackle the growing concerns in Donegal over fighting footage spreading across social media. We have three guests in studio to discuss this. We'll say good morning to Patrick McGlynn, the Juvenile Garda Liaison Officer. Patrick, very welcome back into studio. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Greg.
No, it's our pleasure. Martin Keeney, Prevention Partnership and Family Support Senior Manager. Martin, great to see you again.
Thanks very much, Greg.
And we've Dorothea Allen, TUSLA and Chair of the Working Group. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Right, so we're talking here, are we, Patrick? We're talking whereby there's an incident in the street or wherever it might be, and it's videoed, and then that video is shared. Potentially it might be useful for the Gardaí in terms of finding those responsible. But what worries me about it is, you know, an attack can be very serious, but it can be fleeting.
Yes.
What we have now, though, is with modern technology, is it goes out into the stratosphere of social media. And that person, whilst they might physically recover and maybe emotionally recover at a slower rate, that's always going to be complicated by knowing that this footage is out there in perpetuity.
Yeah. Well, listen, that's what this came about. We noticed I'm part of the North Central Family Support Network with the others here in the group. And we had our meeting last year in June 2023, and we decided what was... We were talking about things that are happening in our community and especially with young people. And I highlighted that through my area of work that I noticed that a lot of young people were being targeted in these violent assaults, especially school-going children, finishing school at 4 o'clock in the evening, leaving their school, going out of the school grounds, and then being set upon and attacked by other youths. And these incidents being recorded and then uploaded online, something that should not be happening. So we decided, could we do something about it? So a group of us got together, a few of us volunteered to form a subcommittee, and we went together and we discussed what could we do about it. We knew we couldn't solve this, but we decided we'd try and do something educational around it. We knew we didn't want these assaults happening. We didn't want them being recorded. We didn't want the recordings being shared, and we didn't want the victim then to remain silent, because a lot of the time when the Gardaí approach these people who have been the victims of assaults, they are the victim of the assault first. That takes a serious toll on them and the people surrounding them, their families and their schools and the communities. And also then, with the footage being shared online, is unacceptable, and that's then they're being targeted then again, and that is a form then of, you know, harassment and intimidation and whatnot. And a lot of these young people then were afraid to come forward and make formal complaints to the Gardaí to have these matters fully investigated.
Yes, of course, because you're asking the victim to effectively be often the sole witness against the perpetrators, and the obvious thing is, are they going to do it again, or how will they get me back, or whatever. As I mentioned, this is funded by Tusla, and Dorothea, four videos have been produced. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, that's perfect. So what we wanted to do initially, we had the idea of producing one video that would highlight it a little bit, that could be maybe used to spread the message. But as we were meeting with a very talented production crew, React Productions, you know, our ideas developed, and this was together with young people. Young people were involved in this process near enough from the outset, because we wanted to make these videos approachable for them. We wanted them to see, you know, actually there is support available. But I suppose the reason why we did not just one video but four was because it was really important for us that all aspects of those affected by this are targeted, you know, that everybody gets something out of it. Because the consequences, we often think, as Pastor Rick said, our initial thoughts maybe lie with the victim because of their physical injuries, maybe because of the mortification that they're experiencing of it being recorded and shared amongst their peer group. But then I suppose the next step then is it filters out. It's not just the victim that's affected. It is the parents of the victim that's affected. It is the wider community that's affected. It is the young person sharing, recording the video and sharing it online that is affected. And it is the perpetrator or aggressor themselves who's also affected by this. And I suppose we just wanted to show the consequences of all those involved in that. We didn't just want to stop just with the victim, although that's hugely important as well. And we want to give them the confidence as well to step forward to report, but also to go out and seek support, which is so vastly available here in Donegal.
Martin, I haven't seen these videos yet, but I hope the message is driven home about breaking the chain. In that, you know, we can empower young people to make a difference, right? And often we sort of say, don't do that, don't do this, don't do the other. But we can also empower them to say that you have in your control here to break the chain here. So if you don't forward this, it doesn't then end up getting forwarded exponentially, okay? Yeah. And they have that power to do that thing for that victim.
Yeah, I think that came out very plainly at the launch on Tuesday. Greg, you're absolutely right. I think as Patrick mentioned, you know, initiatives like this aren't necessarily going to just stop fights happening or stop, you know, what we're hoping to do is educate people. I think you've hit on the key point of it in the sense of what we are trying to do is actually to make everyone in that scenario think, you know, of how it affects, you know, right across the board. So we, as, you know, and I think Dory alluded to that even as speaking at the launch on Tuesday, that it is that key. If you can actually get one person to have to think about not sharing it, and at least the multiplication effect of how many other people see and how many, you know, so that's a big part of it in terms of that education, because I suppose it's, and this is a particular issue, it's not just, as you know, doesn't just apply even to, you know, to physical violence and attacks like this. It's, you know, the mobile phone now has brought up so many different angles in relation to this particular work. But I suppose it's what has been kind of acknowledge right throughout the group is, and that's why one of the reasons that there's no one agency who has the answer in relation to this. So obviously with Dory, with her work with the Youth Justice Project in Fráige, and also like through yourselves in Tusla and through the Gardaí and through that, everyone is in all our services are impacted by that as well, in terms of having to have responses and react. And so it's very important from our end, I suppose, in terms of how we work together to try to, at least from that early intervention end as well, of getting people thinking twice about maybe how they're responding to
it. We've a massive responsibility as parents, guardians, caregivers in this regard to educate and sit down and talk to our children. Mm. What would you do? Like, ask them when they come home from school today, if you were forwarded a picture of a young lad getting beaten up in the street or a young girl being pulled around apart by a hair, what would you do with that video? That's a simple question to ask this evening. What would you do with that video? And you can ask that question in a space whereby, listen, there's no wrong answer here, but what would you do? Yeah. The answer is A, I'd be disgusted, I would delete it. Or if the answer is B, well, it's only a bit of crack, everyone shares them, then you know what conversation to have there. Would they say to the person that sent them, don't send me that stuff again? You know, we can't rely on Patrick from a Garda perspective. We can't always rely on Dorothea from a Tusla perspective, or even in the role that you do, to do all of this for us, okay? Because often we sort of say, well, what are the agencies? Well, what are we doing? Because if it happened to any of our children, we wouldn't sleep at night. Our heart would be broken by this. Yeah. And it's only at the weekend, and I don't like this stuff, but I have to absorb it because of my job. I've sent a video of a young lad in the Twin Towns getting the living daylights kicked out of him. Mm. That was just in the days ahead of this launch. And the sense is, well, what can you do? Can you do something about it, Greg? This is disgraceful, what's happening. You know, but I mean, obviously, it's reported to the Gardaí, Patrick,
and it is
a crime. A crime has occurred,
and it is. Yeah, and it needs to be investigated, you know, when people come forward and report and investigate. And that's what this is about. This is an interagency approach to try and create an awareness and an educational piece around this. And as I said before, we're not going to solve this, but we want to create awareness around this. And we want a conversation going. And we want a conversation going in homes with parents and with young people as well around this, as you quite rightly said there. You know, and what is the appropriate steps to do and to take, you know? And the Gardaí and the other services are always available to assist and help in this here, you know?
Yeah.
We need people coming forward. Some of these victims of these crimes, as I said, are so intimidated, so from the harassment and the shame and the embarrassment and whatnot of this, that they don't want to come forward. But we want to put a message out to them to come forward and speak to the services, to come, be it a parent, be it the school, teachers, the other youth services, Tusla, ourselves, come to Garda Síochána, and we will support them and we will help them through.
And I'm sure they do, and I hope they do, that schools already have in situ a system that engages with those complaints. So it can be multiple. So the school has a role, what can it do? Gardaí, you know, and all that kind of stuff, post-reporting. Because, Dorothea, maybe, you know, an awful lot of people may not be aware, right, but this is a genre of internet content. You know, it's often called Wrecked, R-E-K-T, and it's shared on these websites and get huge traction and what have you. There are numerous accounts on X that literally promote this information, this kind of stuff. They do commentaries over it, you know, and they get their money from it and they make money from it. So, you know, that's what we have to counter.
Absolutely. I suppose within my own role, I'm a family support worker in the Youth Diversion Project here in Donegal with Fráige. And, you know, I get to speak to a lot of parents whose young people may be involved, victims, perpetrators or perceived perpetrators in these instances. So my job as well is to bring a lot of awareness to families on that individual support basis. You know, and I think there's a lot of agencies. You know, we all have a part to play. We have youth workers, we have family support workers, we have schools, we have the Gardaí. So from all sides, these young people need to get these messages. And that's why it was so important for us, like what Patrick hinted at there, or said out loud there, is that these young people are often very, very intimidated to come forward. So they need to receive that message that they are not on their own. They have an entire community standing with them that don't want this.
Yeah.
Well, it might look like them for them when they go online, when they go what you referenced to there on X or on other social media sites, and they see this video maybe where they were insulted, they might feel the whole world is against them because of course for young people a lot of their lives is on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
But actually we want to stand up and say, no, you're not on your own. You know what? There is support available and we are here for you and we stand with you. We say with you that we don't want this.
Yeah, because you can get very quickly desensitized to this type of stuff. You watch three or four of those videos and you don't recoil or whatever any longer. Martin?
What's an interesting hook of the video for me, and I have a teenage son myself and another very soon, one who's going to be a teenager this weekend, and what was fascinating, I suppose that's used as a hook in the video, is that it starts off with as the start of a fight, Greg, and a staged fight, I suppose, with it, but it almost looks very real. And it was interesting even from the hook of the young person, how I found it fascinating that was done on probably at a light that we are, sadly, we're in a kind of space whereby that's attractive, almost in a sense that we want to view that, to want to see that, but then the video very quickly changes then to the kind of key messages that we're trying to get across. So there's a huge element to that in the terms of, you say, that we're countering something that's, you know, very, very, it's a very big issue, not only locally, but nationally and that sort of things. I know we've had conversations with Patrick around this, that it is something that's happening quite regularly in the county, in a sense of youth, you know, not just, I suppose, videoed assaults, but youth assaults is a challenging area, you know.
Sexual assaults within peer groups, unfortunately, as well, are skyrocketing as well. Yeah, I know it's a different issue, but is it worth, Martin, pointing out at this stage that, well, firstly, the majority of young people are amazing.
Yeah, you know,
and also too, I think if we can get them on board with this, they're also amazing motivators and campaigners amongst their peers.
Yeah.
So really, you know, it's they that we need to really drive this as well, because they're the most powerful in this conversation, I think.
Yeah, it's a big key point, I suppose, is even working from a sister perspective often, you can see that, you lose sight of that. We know that there's a big cohort of our youth population who are doing very well, but we, from my own end, it's been a kind of family support lead in terms of TISLA, hoping to only really step in is where that family needs that additional help. And but I think it's important too, these particular initiatives like this, do highlight that particular need, you know, at a very early level, in a sense of it's the wider education piece. It's how to, you know, you could be, this impacts the young person who could be the person just sitting there watching it and wanting to share it, or, you know, I suppose it's that even wider piece too of the person who gets caught up in it or getting, you know. And what was really interesting for me is that even within the videos, like, and Dory's alluded to it, we're looking also at the likes of, because I suppose as a parent of even the, you know, say the aggressor in that situation, or the, you know, never mind the parent of the victim, you can feel quite helpless, you know. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's that piece too of even the videos themselves bringing quite a good light to that particular piece. And I suppose it's that kind of piece whereby, as Dory said, then the piece for that is if a parent needs support to manage that situation or support that. What we're trying to promote through, I suppose, this has come about, as Patrick mentioned at the start, through what we call our kind of child family support networks. They exist. We have five of those across the county now.
Yes.
And part of that is about bringing the professionals together and to look at issues like this and to share information.
I think parents and those reporting need to be reassured, though, that if they do come forward, it's dealt with correctly.
Yeah.
I'm confident Angada Shia Khanna have the mechanism in place to do so. I hope I can be confident that the schools have make it, because what can happen sometimes, even if we try and make inquiries, the wagons get circled because certain school uniforms are in the picture right now. We're not in the name and shame game here, but you would love to see them come back and say, listen, thank you very much for that. It's probably in the best interest for it not to be public, but I can assure you and those that have contacted you that these are the measures that we have in place. And I think we don't need to hide from this either. The media work with the guards. We work with schools, whatever. We're not here to you know what I mean? So I think that's a very important part of this as well. And I'm not saying schools don't do that, but anyway.
At the launch itself, we had a number of schools in attendance as well. And even as part of our subgroup that is behind organising all of this, we were very fortunate to have a principal involved of a Donegal secondary school. So it was really, really important to get the schools on board, because a lot of young people spend a lot of their time in schools, which is fantastic. And like Patrick said earlier, but a lot of these fights maybe happen outside of school as they leave school and they're still wearing their uniforms.
Yes, but the setting that those people, the victim and the perpetrators, may have to return to is that school.
Uh-huh.
And for the victim, that now becomes a prison. because they're locked in with that, those people that were responsible for in this. And that's what I'm saying, yeah, internally.
Absolutely.
The school needs to say, this happened outside our grounds. Maybe it's not our, mm-hmm, but it is their problem.
Yeah.
Because that is the space the child or the young person must return to the next day or 3 or 4 days later. Yeah. And if they don't have a system in place to deal with managing those that are responsible and managing the victim, well then... This all collapses on that, in my view. Not that my view matters,
absolutely,
but you can't say it didn't happen in the school grounds or circle the wagons. You have to say, mm-hmm, right, okay, this is the shared space. This is our, mm-hmm, our actual responsibility.
And schools do.
I do think schools have probably, you know, become much
it's
more
proactive. It's not the ones that do, it's the ones that don't, that I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking off the top of my head.
No, I know. And it's a challenge for them. I would say there's, you know, there's been, because as you can imagine with a scenario like this, it presents lots of challenges from a point of view of, you know, as you say, there's the kind of the worried from the school's perspective or other ways and how that presents. But also, but I do find, you know, and I suppose we work on a kind of sphere, I suppose, where schools, mm-hmm, are often coming to us.
Yeah,
I suppose what they're trying to what they're teaching, and we suppose we promote that through the Safe as Ends or the Child Family Support Networks. It is kind of trying to promote that no wrong door, mm-hmm, approach. Now, schools, as you know, too, have a lot of very specific staff now who are both, you know, the likes of the homeschool liaison officers, so likes of school completion, which has really expanded in this county over the last number of years too. And a lot of those particular schools have a great network of connecting those families into the right support at the right time too, so that things don't escalate. Mm-hmm. And so I think the approaches, but it's also people are, like anything in this particular field, it's people are playing catch up, I think, all the time.
Yeah.
I think schools have had to respond, mm-hmm, in their own, and probably it's been a learning curve for lots of us in relation to this particular area. Mm-hmm. That's an ongoing one,
yeah,
you know.
I'm not going to be argumentative. It isn't, because many of us were bullied in school. There was no phones or fighting, but we still were, and went through the process of, you know, we should have actually some sort of a model in place before phones were invented. Patrick, so from a Garda perspective, how can you reassure people then in terms of, you know, that this is seen as a crime, that if you're made aware of it, it is investigated, you know, and obviously with young people, maybe it has to be done differently than it might adults, I don't know. But you have systems in place. You know how to deal with this if it's brought to your attention in a way that doesn't re-victimise the victim.
Of course we do, and the Gardaí take this all very seriously, like, and do deal with people, and we'll support anyone that is a victim of this crime and come forward. We certainly will, and we take it very, very seriously. And myself, being as juvenile liaison officer here in the area, we deal with people, with young people under the age of 18 under the juvenile diversion programme, and there's methods in place there for dealing with situations like this here.
And I don't think that program should be something that people might be afraid of, even a parent or what have you, because I'm sure you've seen young people that needed just a little bit of intervention,
exactly,
and have just gone on to be, you know, wonderful contributors to society.
Exactly, as you quite rightly said earlier there, that we have fantastic young people in our county, sometimes it's just a wrong decision, it's a bad decision. Sometimes maybe it's just spur of the moment, or sometimes it's just getting caught up in the situation. And we will work with those people. They're usually very, very good young people coming from good homes, and we just need a bit of guidance and a bit of support. And that's what these videos are about. Yeah. Social media is fantastic, but sometimes it's not used correctly.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity for young people to use. These are very, you know, great awareness, these videos. They're a talking point, and they're educational. And we're inviting young people all to look at these, and to parents, and to share these videos out there, and use social media in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we also have to consider that those who are responsible sometimes maybe are being put up to it themselves for fear of them having done. You just don't know what goes on in a sort of bullying environment. It's not very pleasant. So how do we, Dorothea, I presume the schools are going to sort of get these out to students, or do we go to a resource and share them with our young people? How do you want this really important info? And I love this campaign. I really think it's important. But how do we get it to the right people that need to see it?
Yeah.
In the cool places. Don't put me putting it on my Facebook, right? Because I can guarantee you no one under 25 is going to see it. But.
Absolutely. We've even noticed that on our own sort of social media.
Yes.
We have a few likes on Facebook, but we've got quite a few more likes on Instagram. So that's, I think, where it's at. Instagram, TikTok, you know, where the young people are at. And that's one aspect to it, sharing it online. So the videos are available online on the parenting platform, so they can be shared from there. It's a YouTube channel from by Tesla. And they can be accessed there and shared. But also, I suppose that's why we invited all the schools to the events, to the launch event, as well as we asked the schools as well, include it in your curriculum if you can. I know at the end of the event, I was speaking to one SPHE coordinator of one of the Donegal schools, and they were saying, you know what, we really want to include these videos as part of our SPHE curriculum. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one way of lots of people seeing it. But I also think just watching the videos is amazing, but we need to dive deeper. You know, we need to ask the right questions.
Because they capture the victim, they capture the person who's doing it, and then there's people who are very active around them in watching it. And then there's almost like another ring of people that are like, oh, I'm not happy with this. What's happening? But I can't walk on.
It's also, Greg, and it's also for the parents as well. We want everyone to watch these videos. It's not just for the young people, particularly the parents, each and every parent to watch these videos as well.
The danger of a campaign like this, in a way, in terms of the next steps, are that sometimes you want to get it, you know, to the correct audience as well. Mm. And, you know, one particular aspect of the next step, which I thought is really innovative, and that's came from the guys working in partnership with the cinema where we had the launch, is that over the midterm week, for example, Greg, the Century Cinemas have agreed to actually show the video before every film, you know, which is another great way of even getting the actual message out to maybe a wider audience too, who are coming, even from a point of view of just to see the latest blockbuster that's coming out and that side of things. And can, as you know, that's a week where a lot of young people go to the cinema and stuff. So there's a lot of joined up thinking in terms of actually how we're going to get across. I think what's been interesting for us too, and I suppose it harks back to the earlier point, is that it's gaining also a lot of traction even at a wider level. I know I think that we've had a lot of feedback, even I can see probably the video's been utilised even more on a national level as well, which is a credit to the working group. And if you don't mind, Greg, if it's all right, I would also like to, because I'm conscious of, I'm here today as a kind of manager in terms of what we call prevention, partnership and family support, but the working group itself contained a lot of other members too, and I suppose I just wanted to acknowledge them as well, because actually there's a lot of key agencies there who are involved. Actually, obviously Dory from Frauga and Patrick were very heavily involved from the Garda perspective. We also had Gareth Gibson from Donegal Youth Service been involved in this working group. I had two of our own team, Nicola Harvey and Melanie Sweeney, who've been involved. And also you had Cathy Dill from Donegal Domestic Violence Service, and Margaret O'Connor as principal from Loretto Community College Milford has been involved as well, and as well as Gary Glennon, who I know is no stranger to the show here from Letterkenny Youth and Family Show, Letterkenny Youth and Family Service, and also Michael McDevitt from the Donegal Youth Council, who's obviously been a key link to getting young people's voice involved in this particular process as well. So there's, and I know there was lots of others. You'll see a lot of other familiar faces and voices and whatnot who all contributed to the videos as well.
High production,
and it's done really, really well by React Productions, as I've mentioned.
No doubt about that. Dorothea, anything you want to finish up with?
I just want to encourage everybody who's listening to check out the videos. Find them online. They are on social media. They are on the parenting platform. And share them with your young people. Watch them yourself and stand with us to just send out that message that we don't want this in our community. We don't want this for our young people. And it's time just to stand up and support the victims, support everybody involved in this, and just, let's raise awareness together.
Patrick McGlynn, the Juvenile Garda Liaison Officer, anything you want to highlight or think's important to say?
Just to say that exactly just what Dory said there. We don't want this. That's what this campaign came out of. This was us coming together to stand up to this and to support families involved in this, that we don't want this. And Garda Síochána is always available there to support. And we take this very, very seriously, and we will investigate any instance comes to our knowledge and that people want to come and speak to us about.
Very important note to finish on. Patrick McGlynn, excuse me, Juvenile Garda Liaison Officer, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Martin Keeney, always a pleasure as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
And last but not least, of course, Dorothea Allen, who's TUSA, from TUSA and chair of the working group.
Frauga.
Yeah.
You're all right.
No problem. So we'll
which is actually a great wee organisation.
Yeah,
they're doing fantastic work.
But TUSLA were involved in the production of this race.
TUSLA were the funders of this project. Yes.
Thank you very much indeed, all three of you. We'll be back with more after the break. We were talking yesterday about a walk in the park for Parkinson's, which is taking place this weekend. And it was said during the course of that interview and it is a statement of fact that Parkinson's primarily affects those over the age of 65. But that being said, it's not exclusively a condition that affects people of that age. Dave joins me on the programme now. Dave, good morning to you, and thanks so much for contacting and taking the call.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning to you. Regarding your mum was on yesterday, but Parkinson's affects mostly over 60, 65. Well, I was 48 when I was first diagnosed. Like, and I know several people even younger than myself has Parkinson's. Mm. You know, so Parkinson's hasn't got an age limit, you know.
Yeah. And you at 48, Dave, what was happening that you realised it needed further investigation?
Well, I was actually sitting in the sitting room one Sunday evening in my bag packed to go to Dublin to work, and the wife said to me, "You have a shake in your right hand." I said, "I have it this year or more, like, but it's just progressed. And she told me then she'd contact the doctor and made an appointment, so I went to see my local GP. And he referred me to the hospital, and within 2 months I was seen and done tests and all, and by... within 6 months, I was fully diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I thought the whole world has just stopped, like, because there's no help out there for people with onset Parkinson's, young onset Parkinson's. And I didn't know where to turn or anything. And look, I never work again, and blah, blah, blah. Had a mortgage and no work. Didn't know where to turn. But fast forward, like, in years now, and I've met a new group in the area at the moment, and it's four people, young people with Parkinson's, and it started off about a year ago. Now I think there's something like 14, 16 people in this group. Wow. We just meet up on the city hotel and talk about our symptoms to one another. Like, we open up more to people that has Parkinson's.
And how, over the last 10 years, Dave, has your Parkinson's progressed? Has it been rapid, slow? There's no real typical story here, but how has it been for you?
It's been very slow, but it's, like, after 10 years, it's starting to take its toll on me now. Yeah. The movement and, you know, shake has got worse, and other parts of my body are sore, and you can barely walk, and, you know, like, things like that. Like, it's... my most problem at the moment is my feet freezing and I'm flapping and falling. What's the condition?
Is there anything, or what's the treatment like? Have you received any treatment to slow the progression of Parkinson's, or does anything work for you in relation to symptoms, Dave?
Well, I'm actually on medication at the moment. Like, I take it every 4 hours, and like, it does help a bit, like, but then when, after a couple of hours, it starts to wear off. You know, you have to wait to your next time, like, to take your next dose of medication before it kicks in again.
And we talked earlier on yesterday, in fact, about how exercise can help. But, I mean, obviously, if you're starting to feel this deadness, this numbness in your feet, and you can trip and fall, it's going to affect the confidence, I suppose, in getting up and moving about, is it, Dave?
Well, the dose, like, it takes, I take a medication, first medication at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it takes me about 40 minutes before it kicks in, and, you know, you can gradually get out of bed and start moving, like, you want. Like, so getting up and moving in the morning is my biggest problem at the moment, but once I get moving, like, I try and keep going most of the day.
And Parkinson's, will your condition continue to worsen, Dave, or does it reach a level where it can pause for at least a period of time?
It's a very hard question to answer, because some days you're in great form and next day you're just down, like, and you can barely move. So, like, it all depends on the day, like how your progression goes. Like,
I've spoken to people with Parkinson's in the past who be out in public, be going shopping or whatever it might be, and they're judged to be inebriated or drunk or something along that line, or maybe people aren't very accommodating to them. Does that ever happen to you?
People very quick at pointing out that you're drunk. I was coming up the street way back about 8, 10 years ago, And the woman came out to me and she said, "The right, they're walking, they're redone." She said, "Were you in the pub today?"
Right.
And I said, "No, I was in the pub." That's part of the Parkinson's disease. You kind of sway from side to side. People automatically think you're drinking or you're in drugs or whatever, like, you know.
But I suppose eventually
it's
you get
very quick
to, I suppose eventually do you get a thick skin to that, though, and just pass it
off? You have to, you just laugh it off. I'd be a kind of jokey boy, just laugh it off, and because the way I look at it, there's always somebody worse off than you.
Dave, how beneficial then, just in sort of processing it and living with the reality of it, have these meetings you've had with other people, you know, sitting around talking about it, and you're talking to people that get what you're talking about as well. Has that been really helpful for the emotional side of this, Dave?
Oh, without a doubt. I look forward every month. We meet every month, once a month, and I look forward to getting on to meeting these people. We just sit around a table and a cup of coffee or whatever, cup of tea, and everybody chats, like. And just now we're on, we had actually a meeting tonight, the first meeting back after summer for us to meet, so we're all meeting up tonight. And as I say, the people out there maybe has been recently diagnosed or on the process of being diagnosed and don't know where to turn to. So this group has an open door for anybody who'd like to come along. And even if Randy brings somebody with them to support them to get into the group, like, I know it's not nice walking into a group of people first time.
But you've all walked in.
When I
was
first
time,
there were four or five, now there are 14 or 16.
It's amazing. It is. Because, too, you know, we all deal with things in our different ways, and everyone has the different sort of boundaries and what have you. But I can imagine it's that type of condition that you could withdraw into the house, maybe not talk about it, get frustrated, you know, get angry. And maybe these kind of chats around the table are a way of sort of getting that out so that when you go home, you can, you know, chill out a bit more.
Oh, that's exactly what this wee group's all about. Just, I know a woman is in the group and she's like, she's full medication for Parkinson's. And she has a 6 years now and she's yet to be diagnosed. But yet, no, she's getting all the medication, she's seeing everybody, but she hadn't been diagnosed with this condition yet. And it's the same as the rest of you, sick. But as I say, the group is just unbelievable. People just coming into it, like, it's unbelievable, and to chat about. And it takes a lot of pressure off you as well, like, when you can go there and really, you know, talk to people about your condition.
All right, Dave. Well, listen, I've really enjoyed learning a bit more about it from you, and really important, I think, too. And as I say, our contributor yesterday didn't say it was exclusively over 60-65s, but it's primarily, and I think then the public don't think, oh, this could be me at 48. But unfortunately, it was you, Dave. But I'm glad to hear that you're in good spirits, and I wish you nothing but good for the future. And thanks so much for talking to me.
Could I leave, if anybody wants any information or wants about the group, could I leave my number with you?
If you're happy for us to pass it on, we shall do so. Dave, thank you very much.
Yes, I'd love to pass it on. And anybody wants to come to the group, like, our meeting tonight in the City Hotel and day at 7 o'clock, if anybody wants to come along.
Well, it sounds like it would be very useful, Dave. Thanks so much. Best wishes.